Contour Ridge looks ancient in the rain. Winter snow can paint her young again. I'm a lucky man, call this home.
Welcome to this week's podcast of History Speaks from the Montour County Historical Society. I'm Terry Diener, a member of the Board of Directors, and your host for the program. The Society is preparing for reopening of our museums in May. Planning's also underway for our speaker series for 2019. As we draw closer to our opening, more details will be forthcoming. Yearly memberships of $20 are available for individuals. $30 family memberships are offered for those living under one roof. There is also a lifetime membership of $300. More information is available on the Montour Historical Society homepage. If you do social networking, the Society also has a Facebook page where we share pictures and stories from the past. Our podcast this week deals with harvesting the ice in Danville and was written by historian Helen Sis-Hawes for the 1992 January Bicentennial Gazette. In today's world, with our freezers and automatic ice cube makers, it's difficult to realize that harvesting ice was a major event. Refrigeration by means of natural ice was employed for thousands of years. The ancient Xi Qing, or Book of Odes, reveals that ice cellars were in use in China as early as 1000 BC. Ice collecting and storage as a business developed in the U.S. early in the 19th century. Icemen were busy from December through February, cutting ice to be used throughout the summer. The changeover from harvesting natural ice to the artificial manufacture of ice was underway by 1900. The first American refrigerator appeared in 1918, but few homes had one. Beginning in 1930, refrigeration grew into a giant industry nationally, but as late as the early 50s, there were still icemen in Danville. The 1857 Intelligencer noted that the citizens of Danville were busy filling their ice houses with clear ice of good thickness from the Susquehanna River. There were some years, like 1890, when the winter season was mild and ice arrived by train from the Poconos. The job of cutting out and wrestling with 100-pound blocks of ice while standing on the rim of an open hole took a lot of skill and concentration. The process of getting clear, clean ice would begin during the initial freezing period. An ice boat would break up the frozen crust. The surface debris was floated away from the cutting site, allowing a smooth, clear layer to develop. At cutting time, the snow was removed by a horse-drawn plow with specially grooved edges that scored the ice into 3-foot rows. Then men, using great strength and energy, sawed the ice into huge squares. Horse-drawn wagons carried the ice blocks off to the ice houses for storage. There would be as many as 22 teams of horses pulling wagons of ice from the dams and the river. This could prove to be dangerous. In January of 1883, a team of horses broke through the ice near the bridge. It took an hour to rescue them. A crew of 25 men and 8 teams were employed in 1904, digging out the bottom of Castle Grove, the Bennett Ice Pond located on the grounds of what is now St. Cyril Academy. The pond, from which had for years harvested great crops of the best quality of local ice, had gradually filled up with earth. At times, there was 3 feet of mud sediment at the bottom. The winter of 1918, according to the local newspaper, had written a whole new chapter in harvesting ice. There were seasons when there was no ice at all. Seasons when the river and ponds were frozen over early and remained locked with ice until late. But even the old-timer couldn't recall a season when the ice was so heavy that it could not be handled, when the work of harvesting it at its most prolific sources had to be abandoned. It began to look as though Danville might not harvest enough summer ice. J.L. Klein had his usual supply from the ponds of Castle Grove, obtaining a very good product 17 to 18 inches thick. On the dam at Mahoning Creek, the ice was not so easily handled. Early in January, the ice had attained the amazing thickness of 26 inches, and even in the deepest part of the channel, there was not enough water remaining to float the cakes of ice. The work of cutting ice on the dam had to be abandoned. To supply the enormous deficiency, Mr. Lawrence began cutting ice on the river, a product which would be suitable for refrigerator purposes. he leased the big ice house of A.M. Peters in the Second Ward. Anyone taking time to stroll to the ice house or out upon the river to watch the cutting process would see some ice cakes that eclipsed anything else in the shape of ice that was ever pulled out of the North Branch. As discovered by the representative of the Water Supply Commission, the ice on the North Branch was at places 27 inches thick. The ice being cut by Mr. Lawrence was taken from the deepest part of the channel, where the current was a factor. A pretty good idea of its dimensions was the weight of each cake of harvested ice, 450 to 470 pounds. A half dozen cakes made a two-horse load. Unloading it required two horses by means of rope and pulley to lift the ice cakes one at a time off the wagon to a point overhead where they were swung into the ice house. Mr. Lawrence engaged four teams in hauling. In addition to the homes, hotels, restaurants, ice cream parlors, and meat markets needed to be furnished with ice. In 1904, J.A. Lawrence, who cut out most of his ice from the dam at Mahoning Creek, installed a steam-powered elevator to raise the ice from the dam to the cinder tip above to be stored in his large ice houses. The Continental Fire Company stands at the location today. Storing the ice properly was very important. The ice house crew would cover the floor of the ice shed with a 10-inch layer of sawdust to provide the necessary insulation. Then the ice blocks came down a ramp, and shovels full of sawdust were spread over and around the blocks, which were wedged together. A space was left around the walls so the stacks of blocks could be surrounded with the sawdust. Difficult as the work of cutting ice was, there was no shortage of help. In 1914, many more applied for jobs than were available. 1925 was also a very good year in spite of an unusually heavy snowstorm. J. A. Lawrence, distributor of much of the ice consumed in Danville, cut and stored 300 tons in one day. It took 10 days to fill the two storage buildings, each of which had a capacity of 3,500 tons of ice. 30 men were employed at the dam cutting, lifting, and storing the ice. Three times that number applied for the jobs. By the late 20s, most ice cutting was done on local dams and ponds instead of the river. However, in 1931, a late summer drought caused the icemen to resort to the river for their supply. On February the 15th, 1931, the Duart Milk Company installed an ice-making plant in the former Lars Ice Cream Company on Spring Street. The ice manufacturing plant had a daily capacity of 15 to 20 tons. In March of that year, due to an unusually mild winter, not a pound of ice was harvested in the vicinity. J. A. Lawrence made an agreement with the Duart Milk Company's ice plant to supply Danville with ice. This was the first time Danville depended upon artificial ice. The Morning News of March 5, 1932, stated that the records of Lawrence Ice Company showed that over the 25 years from 1902 to 1927, there wasn't a season when the normal harvest of 3,400 tons of ice was not cut locally. During the last years, 1928 to 1932, there was only one full crop of ice. A few of the men who worked in the ice business were Charles Kelly, Tom Faust, Bob Houlihan, John Curry, Ralph Heim, Ed Blosky, Laurie Yeager, Howard Mutchler, Bob Purcell, Bill Seasholtz, Bud Remley, and Kirk Delkamp. Eleanor Deutsch remembered that Sunday afternoons, when there was ice on the river, many of Danville's families would be there with their wagons collecting ice to use in the making of ice cream. She said, "I believe everyone in Danville enjoyed ice cream on Sunday afternoon in the winter." That ends our podcast for this week from the Montour County Historical Society. Just another few pages from the local history books on a business providing a valuable service to the people of Montour County. I'm Terry Diener, hoping you'll listen in again next week.
I'm a lucky man, call this home, call this home, I'm a lucky man.